Right. Hopefully we can get started quite quickly because we've lost time to travel half across London. I got a phone call this morning from Gordon saying this seminar is out here, and I am probably the person with the least best sense of direction. I had this panic on the train coming up that I'd be walking around London with this group of people trying to find this room. So you're very welcome. I'm here. My name is Jackie Oliver. I'm the Chief Executive of a charity called Through the Roof. And I want to introduce our two speakers here. I know you've got the biography about them on your leaflet, hopefully. Sophia, I've met many times before, and she heads up, she's the co-founder of ASNA, and also has a child who has a disability. And every time I've met her, she's been dynamic. There's something about her heart and her spirit that I know, and I'm sure you'll really appreciate what she's got to say. And Julia always done his talks on the phone thus far, but she also is a co-founder of Carers Christian Fellowship. And now works very much more with older people and carers and special needs of older people. So widespread, and I'm sure you're going to have the real value. They're going to give opportunity for questions and discussion at the end. So if you can hold it, any thoughts and questions and think about those, so that towards the end there's an opportunity for some dialogue. So let's give them both a warm welcome.
Thank you very much, Jackie. Can I ask, first of all, is it okay if I remain seated? You can see me. Thank you. For two reasons. One, because I need to handle the screen, the computer, but I just feel that I'm on sort of chatting level, and I think that's really what the session is about this morning. I'm looking forward to the session. Jackie said, my name is Sophia Nichols, and I have a young man, Matthew, who I'll talk about in a minute. But it's actually through his birth that my life has been moved into this direction. Can I just get a feel for those of you who today are carers? Is there anybody here that's a carer? Okay, fantastic, good. So we're going to do this session together, because I'm hoping that we're going to be able to share and learn from each other. My aim really is just to tell you a little bit about my experience, and also probably the experience of other, particularly parent carers and young carers, because that's my experience. And Julia will talk a little bit more about the adult carers. Is that the case, June? So I'll start off really just by saying a little bit about some facts about carers. So, definition. Carers provide unpaid care by looking after someone who may be ill, someone who may be frail or disabled, and it might be a friend or a member of the family. And I'm hoping that carers who are here can relate to this. And I stress the word unpaid because this is obviously done, and it's research has identified that some carers care for over 50 hours a week for their life. So my son, for example, who has disability, I am his full-time carer. There are many. I've put this down, hidden carers. There are many people who do not see themselves as carers. And in some cultures as well, it's almost forbidden to say that you are a carer. If your child is ill, or if your husband or wife may be ill, it's your responsibility. You do it because they are your family. And as a result of that, because they don't see themselves as carers, it's often the case that they don't get the support that they could probably benefit from. So I just mentioned that. There are nearly 6 million unpaid carers in the UK. It's 10% of the population. And there are a number of effects on caring. There are effects on health, there are effects on financial constraints, and it's suggested that parents of children with disabilities spend 3 times as much as those without. And I've just indicated at the bottom there that there is a lot of isolation with caring, and I'll talk a little bit more about that later. So I've identified 3 types of carers here. Adult carers are those who are looking after an adult. They themselves may also be an adult. Young carers, or I'd also suggest siblings of young people who have brothers and sisters that have a disability, and then parent carers. So my story really is about parent carers, or my son, Matthew, and the effect it's had on our life. So I'll just put all this up, just because I want to show you a picture of my son, Matthew, there. So I'm a mother of 2. Matthew's my oldest boy. He was born back in 1996, and I remember the birth clearly to this day. I remember it was a water birth, And I remember taking him out of the water, and he was, because he was my first son, I had no idea of the experiences of a child. And I looked into his eyes, and I noticed there was something that was very different. I remember poking around, as you do as a parent, and with one side, my sort of finger went in, and I thought, something wrong here. And I remember looking up at the midwife and saying, what's wrong with her? Something wrong with his eyes. And she said to me, oh, it's okay, dear. So straight away, you know something's wrong. And within a couple of days, we were rushed off to Great Ormond Street, where my son, Matthew, was diagnosed to have a condition, a very rare condition, called Peter's anomaly. Now, Peter's anomaly really is, physically, when you look at his eye, he has what appears to be a cataract. It looks like a cataract, but in fact, it's a scarring of the cornea. And on the other side, in fact, he doesn't have an eye at all. He wears a false eye. So Matthew was blind, and we were aware of that when Matthew was very young, that he was going to be blind. So you can imagine, I suppose, the, if I'm honest, the devastation as a mother. First child, first grandchild, first everything. And I remember my mother ringing me up at the hospital and asking, you know, how is it? And I said, oh, I think there's something wrong. And she could immediately sense there was something in my voice. So Matthew was born, as I said, without an eye. And as he got older, we began to realise that there were other things that were wrong as well. He has a condition, as I said, called Peter's anomaly. He also has severe learning difficulties. So he doesn't have any verbal communication. He uses a speech output device. And in fact, before he got the speech output device, those of you who may be aware of the frustrations that you may come across with a child who doesn't have any verbal communication, he couldn't tell me that he wanted something to eat or that he was hot or that he was cold. It was always about guessing. So you can appreciate the frustrations for him and frustrations for us as parents. When he got to the age of about 3, he seemed to be developing, you know, as, you know, keeping up with his milestones. But then we noticed that with the speech that he had, he lost it. And also as he got older, we realised that there possibly was some hearing problems as well. When he got to age of about 11, 12, he went into puberty. And a young man that was actually walking, he was physically very able, he didn't have any speech, so all the issues that came along with that, we thought his strength was his physical ability. He then developed an undiagnosed neurological problem. We almost went back to the point at which he was born, where we felt that we had got a handle on all these other disabilities, and now suddenly he wasn't able to use his legs. So you can imagine all of the changes that went on in our life. Now we had to make adaptations to our home. We had to decide on whether we were going to stay where we were. I mean, all of these things sort of came in, I think, within the space of a year, because the neurological condition, which is still undiagnosed, came on very quickly. Meanwhile, he obviously has a brother that was born. Christopher James, that's his younger brother, is 12 now. And I'll talk later on a bit about the experiences of families that have siblings that have brothers or sisters with a disability. And I think I always see myself as going on a parallel journey. I've got one journey with a son that goes to a mainstream school and has all the usual developmental milestones, and then another journey with he's a young man now, 14, and I must say he's a typical 14-year-old, and he's able to communicate in his own way. Those communications are very, very subtle, so I think if you miss them, it can lead to frustrations again. He goes to a special school, but along with the neurological problem, he has obviously developed incontinence. So he's double incontinent. He, as I said, uses a wheelchair. He doesn't have any speech, and I'm saying a lot of negatives, but I will in a minute say a lot of positives. But you can appreciate the experience that we had as he was developing. So what I wanted to say at this next stage is something about the experience, I think, of a lot of parents that go through having a child, the elation of having a child, and then having a child that's diagnosed to have a disability. And those stages, I'm not going to spend too much time on them, but there is a suggestion that the stages you go through are those of denial. And I can remember, if I'm honest, I did go through a stage of denial. And I think just before that, there was a stage where it's been described by some as immobilization. You're not really sure what to do. It's like you've been, you know, you're standing, you're like little, I don't know if any of you have seen a cat or a rabbit, when you're driving along and your headlights hit their eyes. It's almost that sort of experience that I had. It's like you didn't know what should I do. And then I think probably after about 3 months, I said, I've got to do something here. And so I spent a lot of my time trying to get as much information as I could to see, can I help this young man? How can I help this young man? Because he's going to grow up in a society that doesn't really, I feel, understand what those issues are. I went through a lot of anxiety. I went through a lot of fear. I was concerned for his future. I felt very guilty as well. I think this was very clear because I started to question myself, what had I done in birth that had caused this? And I must be honest to say that my church didn't help in that, because often what was almost said to you was that there must be something that you'd done that could have caused this. There must be something. I know I've heard parents say that, you know, the Bible talks about the sin of the forefathers being passed down. And I think for us, both my husband and I, we went through a phase where we almost wanted to withdraw from the church because of these misunderstandings, I think, really. I remember one pastor saying to me that he wanted to come to the home and he wanted to anoint Matthew. He wanted to cure Matthew. And to be honest, all I really wanted was someone, this is when he was about maybe 5, 6, 7, when he was going through a lot of difficulties, to just be there for us, maybe even to take him out, you know, for a while so that I could get a bit of respite. But that didn't seem to be what the church members felt they wanted to do. It was they wanted to cure him, they wanted him to be normal. You know, that was what I think people felt was what was needed. And as he got older, I think we began to realise that something needed to be done for people to understand what the issues were. And when he was probably about 4 or 5, my husband and I had an experience at a very big conference. I'm a Seventh-day Adventist, and we have an annual five-yearly conference, a five-year conference, where all the Adventists in the whole of the world come together. It's called the General Conference. And I remember going to the Children's Sabbath School, and there was a notice on the door which says, "We do not cater for children with special needs." And I came back to the UK, and I thought, this is an opportunity. I wouldn't get angry about it. It's an opportunity. Because we felt there was a lot of ignorance, and I use that word in the true sense of the word, and thus the birth of the Adventist Special Needs Association. And it's going to be 10 years next year. And it's through this association that we run training and awareness programs. We provide respite for families through our residential weekends, through our residential short breaks. We provide a lot of resources. We also signpost a lot of families to some of the other really fantastic charities that are around. Through the Roof is one charity which, you know, it was like a godsend when we found out about Through the Roof. They produce some fantastic resources and literature, and the knowledge that's there is phenomenal. Causeway Prospect is another one as well. So I think we try and work as close to them as we can, and through the Churches for All, we are trying our best to educate our church to have an understanding of some of the issues that we've experienced. I think I did get to the point where the poem Welcome to Holland, has anybody heard of the poem Welcome to Holland? There is one. I really want to read it to you. Do you mind? Now, what I should say is that there are some handouts on the side there. Later on, if you want to take, you can either give them out now or I can read it to you. And I think when I read this, I remember reading it when Matthew was probably about 6 months. And I think before then, I must be honest and say I was in a state of denial. I knew I had a son that had a disability. It was about, I think, 3 months when I remember receiving a leaflet in the post which said, you know, your child is registered blind. I remember crying my eyes out when I saw that. But I think 6 months down the line, somebody handed this poem to me, and it changed my life. And it goes like this, and I'll read it. It's called Parenting a Special Needs Child by Emily Pearl Kingsley. Now, I am often asked to describe the experience of raising a child with a disability, to try to help people who have not shared that unique experience to understand it, to imagine how it would feel. It's like this. When you're going to have a baby, it's like planning a fabulous vacation trip to Italy. You buy a bunch of guidebooks and you make your wonderful plans. You're going to go to the Colosseum, you're going to see the Michelangelo David, you're going to go on the gondolas. You may have learned some handy phrases in Italian. I mean, it's all very exciting. Now, after months of eager anticipation, the day finally arrives. Then you pack your bags and off you go. Several hours later, the plane lands and the stewardess comes in and says, "Welcome to Holland." "Holland, you say? What do you mean Holland? I signed up for Italy. I'm supposed to be in Italy. All my life I've been dreaming of going to Italy." but there's been a change in the flight plan. They've landed in Holland, and there you must stay. What you forget is that there's some beautiful things in Holland. The tulips, for example. The windmills. The important thing is that they haven't taken you to a horrible, disgusting, filthy place full of pestilence, famine and disease. It's just a different place. And when I read that, I began to understand that I'm in a different place with Matthew. And I think that the birth of Matthew was specifically, and people don't understand when I say that if I didn't have Matthew, I wouldn't be here today. I wouldn't have met some of the families that I've met through the organisation and the support that we're able to provide. I'm just going to go on a little bit further now to talk about some of the experiences that I've mentioned, but also some of the experiences that some other mothers have expressed to us as organisation. Isolation is one. I know when Matthew was born, when it came to church life, because of the experiences that we'd had, coming to church, and because Matthew wasn't one of these children that would sit quietly, he has autism as well. So there is a tendency for him to call out and to make a noise, and people would look behind and say, could you keep that child quiet? So I remember going to a church once where he was learning, this is when he was walking, he was learning to use a cane, and he was walking along and tapping the cane on the floor. And we were going actually to the church to do a disability awareness program, and the head deaconess came out and she said, "Oh, can you keep this child quiet?" She was really quiet. There's a service going on. Shh. I said, "Okay, no problem." The afternoon we did the awareness program, and afterwards she came up and she hugged me and apologised and said, "I'm really sorry. I really understand some of those issues." And I think it changed her way of seeing things as well. My husband just walked in, Nigel. And I think the experience that she had from listening to the awareness program, her eyes were, as she said, opened, and I think she saw things slightly differently. But there was a place where we came to the place where I decided we hardly ever went to church as a family. One of us would stay behind to stay with Matthew, and the others would go on. And this went on for a number of years, and then I speak to other parents, and it's exactly the same thing that they have. But I think we began to realise that, if we kept doing this, then people in church wouldn't have an understanding of our issues. And so what we decided to do was to educate the church with respect to what was needed. And I think our church, I would like to suggest, is possibly a little bit more understanding of the issues. We managed to identify a member in our church who would say, "Do you want me to take Matthew for a walk?" Because sometimes that's all I wanted, for her just to take him for a walk, so I could sit down with the rest of the family and listen to the sermon. We started in our church a multi-sensory music ministry, so other children like Matthew could also enjoy the Sabbath school program in their way. So isolation is one of the things that you will find a lot of families experience. As a family, we weren't often invited to individuals' homes because obviously Matthew was very destructive. I remember taking him once to a restaurant and walked straight out after he picked up a glass and broke the glass in the restaurant. This isn't something that Matthew did on purpose. He's blind. He was trying to see. So often you find that, you stay away from things. You're often misunderstood. You do get very angry, I think, as well as others, and it can be very lonely. You're anxious about the person you're caring for. You often feel embarrassed as well because of the behaviour. There is a fear of the future. What's going to happen to Matthew when I'm not around? You get very protective. And I think also, you feel this sense of guilt. Frustration is another key thing that you experience as a mother. What about the fathers? Some fathers feel neglected, they feel jealous, they feel that they're a failure, they feel ashamed of the experience, and as well they often feel angry. They feel helpless, they feel they can't fix this problem. And I think I remember when Matthew was born, I remember both Nigel and I thinking about, what can we do? Can we give him one of our eyes so that he could see? You always feel that you want to fix the problem, but of course it's not something that is always possible. You sometimes feel reject. In some instances, in fact, I was speaking to a father recently. We won a residential carers weekend, and we just had one last week. And one of the fathers that was there said that we really want to try and make an effort to try and get more fathers to these events, because we tend to find that it's mainly the mothers that come along. And he said often what happens is, the fathers, if have this experience of a child, they often leave the family because they just can't cope. And this is something that is happening in our churches. They feel neglect. They feel guilty for neglecting the other members of the family. And they often, again, have feelings of guilt and anxiety. And in some instances may actually have depression and deprived of normal life. What about relationships? The suggestion is that a lot of partners vent their anger on each other. They don't manage to find time for each other. The mother may sleep near the child, therefore there's that issue of separation. They're always responsible for the child, and in fact the divorce rate is said to be quite high. My husband and I are still together, we still love each other, and in fact I would like to suggest that Matthew's brought us closer together, and I think also with our experience of knowing a third person in our relationship, that's God, that we are still together. We are, aren't we? Siblings, what is the experience of siblings? Oh, no. What are the experiences of siblings? I put that picture in there just to show you Matthew with his brother CJ. He is fantastic with his brother, but I must be honest, there has been times of jealousy and resentment. CJ has often said to me, "Mama, I don't really want to say this, but sometimes I wish Matthew wasn't born." This is when he was a lot younger. There are those issues. He does often get quite embarrassed as well about his brother, Christopher, Matthew. Matthew does have certain mannerisms. He also has the eye that is... That has this Peter's anomaly, which we call his good eye, because he has some light perception there, is not very pleasant to look at. And I think sometimes CJ gets really... I think what frustrates CJ more than anything else is when people stare at his brother, I think. So I think that's one of the things that he gets frustrated about. And he often does feel left out and guilty. And they're often enlisted as young carers. And one of the things that we have done with our organisation is we've developed... a residential week away for young carers and young siblings, where they and it's really from his experience and of some of the other young carers that we're in touch with, that we feel that they need to have their time out where it's just for them, where they can, if they want to, talk about these issues amongst themselves, and they feel like, actually, I'm not alone. I'm not the only one who feels really bad about my brother or wishes that, you know, he didn't have so much attention as much as I do. And they can talk about those issues if they want, but this is their time away. We take them away for activity, and they've developed the project themselves. And I think when we first started it, we felt they wanted to talk about their brothers, and in fact, they didn't. They actually just wanted to talk about themselves, about their own future. One thing that CJ does actually say, which I think is a positive, is whenever we go to places like Thorpe Park, of course we get to go to the front of the queue. So that's one thing that he says is good about having a brother with a disability. Another thing I think is very good, that you find that young people that have brothers, that they, and I don't just say this flippantly, they are very loving. I find that Matthew and all the other young people that I meet, they have an understanding that is not the same as other people his age. Yes, I would suggest that he had to grow up pretty quickly, because I remember when it was just, you know, often my husband's away and we're trying to get them all to school, he learned pretty quickly how to get himself ready for school, how to get his own breakfast. That just had to happen. Things are a lot different now because we do have respite and we have help, but they grow up very quickly. But I think it's something about young carers that is a wonderful thing. They have a lot of understanding. If we go out sometimes and he sees a young person behaving a certain way, he says, "Mum, I think that person's got..." They just seem to have an understanding. So I think that's something to mention. Just quickly to mention about the disabled person himself. Often, some of them know that they are different and they want to be just like everybody or anyone else. Often they can be underdisciplined, and I must be honest, Matthew does sometimes get away with murder, from his dad, I should say, more than from his mum. and sometimes people, and if we talk about church specifically, but if we go to church, people will be talking to me and say, "How is he today?" I said, "Well, ask Matthew, how are you?" And he will respond. You know, "How are you, Matthew?" And he's shaking his hand, he's trying to put his hand out. And I said, "Well, you know, talk to Matthew." You know, he does understand. He may not be able to speak, but his understanding is immense. And I think often that can happen. This is the thing of, does he take sugar? I'm sure a lot of you have heard of that. So, what can be done? Now, I'm just looking at Jackie to look at the time. So I'm just worried about moving through. Well, I'm going to be stopping in a minute. So I'm just going to quickly go through what can be done. And the reason I'm going to go through this slide, because there are some things that carers have come and said to us that they feel works for them in their church. So I'm going to quickly go through that now. One of the key things, I think, I'm talking now about church life. One of the key things that carers say is the importance of developing a relationship with them, understanding what their needs are. Before you can even start trying to do anything, you need to get to know the family. Everybody's needs will be different. So it's very important that you develop, and I use the word genuine there, a genuine relationship with the family. Show that you care. Another suggestion was to set up a buddy system, and Matthew does have a buddy, shall we say. There's a young man in our church called Alan, a fantastic young man. Whenever he sees me, is there anything that you want me to do for Matthew? And often it is just a case of, because Matthew likes going outside, it's just taking him off for a walk. And there may be other systems that you can develop in your church. But I think the important thing is to find out, first of all, what carers need. I don't want to give you a whole list of things to do, but I think it's important to find out what their needs are. It's really about talking to them. Developing a resource base, and I mentioned Through the Roof earlier. We've got, if you get a chance to look at some of the stands that are out along the corridor outside the main hall, there may be some piece of material that you can pick up. Through the Roof have produced a fantastic book called Carpenter Kids. I don't know if you've got any with you today, but I'm sure you know that's a wonderful resource that you might have. I should say Churches for All have actually got a website, and there's some really good literature and resources on the website that you might want to access as well. And I put at the bottom, I probably shouldn't have put at the bottom, the importance of having a disability awareness training program in your church. I think that's probably one of the first things that you need to do. Just to get people to get a chance to think about for themselves, what are those, how do they see people with disability? What are the issues? What are my attitudes towards people with disability? Because to be honest with you, there are two main attitudes, I think, that create barriers for access to service. And one is personal attitudes, and of course the environment. So what are those attitudes? How do people see people with disability in our church? So some form of disability awareness program can always be very helpful. And that should have been the first one. Before you do anything, you always need to ask first. People need to feel that they're welcomed in the church. You need to try and see if you can get involved with the life in some way. In some cultures, I must say, and I think, again, it's important to identify what people want. Some cultures, they prefer not to talk about some of the issues that they have because, you know, to them it's just not the thing to do. So it's finding a way of working with those groups and as to how you can best serve or support them. Some carers, as I said, may have members at home who cannot come to church. There may be a system that you may want to develop of going to the home to see how you can support them. I'm sure, Julie, you might have something to say about that later on. Okay. And that's just a few resources. What I should say, we do have handouts on this, actually, if anybody wants them, or if we can take some names, I'm quite happy to email them over to someone. But I just want to sort of almost finish with this slide, which says that most families with disability want to feel part of the church life and society. They want to be loved and accepted for who they are, and they'll bring gifts to us in the church and our community. And this slide just talks about why we set the organisation up. So you might recognise the person in the picture on the left there, Tim Wood from Through the Roof. This was one of our training programmes that we invited him to. And that's where I'm going to leave it. There will be opportunities for questions and answers at the end. So I'm going to hand over now to
the microphone.
Oh, yes, yes.
Should we swap places?
Yes, I will do. I'll just...
Sophia and I agreed before the session that she would sort of have the lion's share of the speaking part of today, so I'm just going to be very brief. I felt it was really important that you heard her story. She's the carer. I'm not a carer, so I am representing the Carers Christian Fellowship, which was a charity that I set up, but I set it up with... Brenda and Chris Balaam. Brenda Balaam was herself somebody with a profound disability, and we set it up together, she being conscious of her husband's role in caring for her. So she was the disabled person who set up the charity for carers. But as soon as the charity had grown to a size and a capability that carers could take on all of the roles, then I stepped back. So that's why I'm not involved. It's not that I don't care about it anymore. It's just that I felt that this was really a charity that should be for carers, run by carers, and it is. So they're not free to come because they're all carers. So I'm speaking on their behalf today. You know, they are always there to support carers, but it tends to be on the end of a phone or in other kind of structured settings. My actual role is working for a charity called Dementia UK. So I work quite closely with carers of people
with dementia and involve them in training and such like. And my role has tended to be with older people's carers and with older people themselves. And obviously, dementia is one of the sort of hidden disabilities, isn't it, that we really need to sort of get to grips with in terms of the church's welcome of both the person with dementia and their carers. But that's me. And Dementia UK isn't a Christian charity, but I did start out working with the Jubilee Centre in Cambridge, Christian think tank, and then worked under the umbrella of Scripture Union to run a training project for churches called Action for Family Carers, but that was quite some time ago now. But it was about educating churches of all denominations about the needs of carers. So that's my background. And just to say, just a very quick overview of the activities of the Carers Christian Fellowship. We have a regular newsletter that goes out to the members. I've got some copies here. We have a very small number of groups that meet regularly. We have a network of prayer supporters who can take on praying for specific issues within families of members. We have something called Pen Pal Plus, where carers, Christian carers, can be linked with each other to give friendship and support, mutual support. And we have Quiet Days, which are just an opportunity for carers to get together and explore some of the faith issues, and some slightly longer retreats, like ASNA have, which are about spending time over a period of time in a retreat centre, usually, to think about some of the implications of their caring role for their Christian faith and their journey. So we are interdenominational, and also care for and support carers in all different situations, so parent carers, but also people looking after older people looking after people with physical disabilities, learning disabilities, mental health problems, the whole range, sensory disabilities, the whole range of disabilities. Why do they need the Carers Christian Fellowship? Why did we set it up? Well, really partly because getting to church can be difficult. People can drop out of church life because of the commitment to caring. But also, and perhaps a bit more importantly, the fact that you actually feel like you're going on a different journey, the Holland experience that Sophia was talking about. And sometimes it's only other people who are having their holiday in Holland who can really kind of identify with what you're going through. And it's that peer support. It's support from other people who just instinctively know. And it's a safe place where you can talk about some of the anger and the grief, the soul-searching that goes on, and what this means for your faith in a very safe place where other people understand. It is a unique faith journey, and it is one where you need an opportunity to explain what it means to be a Christian carer. You know, what does this new role, this new responsibility mean in your Christian life, and how can you explore it with other people who know just where you're coming from? So, I think it's really just about other carers who've been there, know what it's like, have been through the same soul searching, maybe moved on from some of the grief and the anger, you know, and found a new and very vibrant relationship with God through the caring. So you have hope then that you can get through this and you can actually learn something hugely valuable in your faith journey. And I just wanted to sort of close by saying that I feel that we really are missing out in not identifying and embracing the contribution of carers, just as much as we're missing out in not embracing the contribution of people with disabilities. Because I do feel that having a caring responsibility like this does bring you very close to the heart of God. You know, that this is the essence of, you know, God's identity is that love and care. And to have to give that, you know, sacrificial love sometimes, and to go through the hardship that sometimes is involved of being alongside somebody who's going through this very difficult experience, somebody that you love, the pain of seeing that, and your faith has been tested by fire, really, isn't it? And that, you know, I'm not a carer, and you know, and I think that, you know, some of us in the, you know, Western Church, we have it quite easy, really, don't we? We don't have persecution, we don't have we have all our material needs met, and our faith doesn't get tested quite so much. But the carers I've worked with, their faith really has been you know, proven through this experience. Some of them go through a wilderness experience, you know, and learn through that, rediscover their faith. And some say that without their faith, they just wouldn't have been able to cope, you know, and that their faith has been their anchor. But I think carers can bring an enrichment to church life, you know, and that the insights that the caring role brings spiritually, you know, we mustn't lose out on what they can, you know, share with us in terms of God's heart, really. So the contact details of CCF are Sue Jones, who is a carer, as I say, twice over, cares for two members of her family, and this is our, you know, base, really, but other members of the fellowship live in all different parts of the country and have a variety of roles. But we do have a website, there are leaflets over there, and do please sort of Google us and find out more. So thank you. We would really welcome people's comments and questions now.
I live in Birmingham, which is a Bath city, and there's immense changes for carers.
Yeah.
I'm a carer of a young daughter who's 31 years old with learning disability. And the future is rapidly changing all the time with personalised budgets, etc. And one of the things that I really see that's a great need, particularly in my city, but I'm sure it's got to be in other areas, but where I live, we have one carers group only. Now, this isn't a Christian group. This is a group for anybody who's a carer, a young person with learning disabilities, one in my city. And I'm desperate for the church to rise up to that call and look at, you know, there's a great need out there for carer support groups. I am very enriched by getting alongside other carers because they inspire me. Because my caring role, as I'm sure my friend here, is very much that I want my son or daughter to have a meaningful day experience. Yeah. And for many carers, in my perspective, it's quite different if it's maybe an elderly person, is that that's what we want. And one of the, for me, I really think there's a challenge for the church to rise to that. And all I need is a couple of people who are not carers who say, come on, Sue, I'll support you in that group. Come on, I'll back you up. I'll be there once a month when we have it. Because I've got enough passion to and enough know-how to inspire. So come on, church, nationwide. Because not only that, if I'm bringing in non-Christians and the church is saying, I'm interested in your caring role, I'm going to speak to the local authority for you. Together we can pioneer what is needed. But the other thing I want to say also, just a small bit, is that what we managed to do in our area again is because people have personalised budgets. People have their own money now to buy a service. So we were able to get a church that gave us a kitchen. We didn't belong to this church, but said you can use a kitchen. And we said we'd set up a cafe. And people pay, five people with learning disabilities pay £50 a day to come and work in our cafe. That we then reach out to the community. Now come on, church. Isn't that creative?
Yes.
But none of our guys with learning disability, this is the crux, right? And hear my heart. None of our guys wipe tables and sweep floors. They chop onions, they fry things, they cook. Because if I'm a parent paying £50 a day for that project, I want you to enhance my daughter or some skills. I don't want you giving him a menial job. But Cathy is just one idea. There's hundreds. You know, today, there's so much, you know, volunteering, what you name it, whatever, that we as churches could be encouraging and enabling people with physical, mental health, and learning.
I'm a carer. I have a 10-year-old daughter with learning difficulties, and also just recently lost my mother-in-law, who for the past 5 years I've been caring for, who has dementia. And I suppose the challenge is that it's quite easy for me as a female. You know, I've started up a support group within our church. We have five couples with special needs children in our church, and we started up a special Sunday school class for really to entice families who have children either with medical difficulties or with behavior difficulties that make it quite difficult for those children to kind of access the mainstream classes. And that's been great, but it's really just getting the fathers involved because it is quite a difficult thing. So I'm just wondering whether through your organization you have any ideas on how to engage fathers.
I just passed the microphone.
Actually, it's a very good question, and even when we have our carers weekend, which we just had, and we asked carers to speak about their experience, it was mainly the women who spoke. But when you do get men coming along and talking and opening up, it in itself is this enrichment that they go out and they engage much more. I mean, I don't think there's a simple answer, really, to it. I think, you know, traditionally in the UK and in other cultures, especially in some traditional cultures, women do take the brunt of the caring role. So necessarily when you go to those conferences, sometimes it's because maybe the men don't really have that much to say because they actually don't really know what's going on. You know, it's a fantastic challenge that you're setting because we find it ourselves, as I said, when we just had ours, there were very few men who spoke. Not because they don't want to. So when we've had men, I think maybe, just like in the church, when you do have men's groups who get together and they talk about their experience, I know I experienced it in a very different way. So for instance, I was really into sports, so what hit me, and so when Matthew was born, I was crying for 4 days non-stop, and I think I cried. I still do. I go to parent groups, and I sometimes just sit there, and maybe it's something for me because I cried that deep, you know, I grew up crying that deep. maybe I just cried too much. But when you do get men opening up and talking, it's really powerful. You need more role models, and there aren't enough role models of men who are willing to talk about these issues. And because men traditionally think it is a women's role, so we need to start that. And I think you know, identifying the problems you have. Maybe just getting them coming along, they're the buddies. Maybe getting them to get involved in the more macho aspects is having the challenge of getting those young kids involved in the musical aspect, which they like, which most we've found, I'm not sure it's Sarah's had, but most of the same children love music, really enjoy music. So it's amazing to get into that. And getting them out of the park, so the buddy that's with Matthew, you know, getting a group of them to have a day where they go out and they take the children out and do something in the outside, maybe, you know, I don't know, maybe sort of take them for a walk or a charity walk. We often have something where we collect the buddy and those who are from wheelchairs, and we'll just get to walk and talk and maybe have men like challenges. So perhaps that's something that
will
work, but it's big.
I think it's just to say very quickly, Jackie, it is something that we recognise, and we've recognised over the past, I think it will be 10 years next year. And in fact, I think the last year that we had our carers weekend, it was the largest number of men, and it was probably about 6 men who turned up. And I think this year, there's only probably about the same number. And one of the fathers has taken up that challenge to see what can be done to encourage more fathers to be involved. And what I should stress is, ASNA isn't just only for Adventists. It's for anybody and everybody that has a need or want or a heart for working and supporting people with disability. But it is something that we're very keen to see what we can do to improve.
2 minutes still, we've got our 2 minute warning, so we're actually past it. But just one last point, okay.
I live next door to my mother in Redditch. And my children, and both of them, which got two, were diagnosed with nothing. In other words, they're still waiting on So the role of the carer then becomes very, very important. Because you can't say, take this pen and you get better. Try this and try that and try again and go back and wrap in another cage. And so therefore I had no organisation to look after me as a carer. There was just me. So when somebody said, we're thinking this is set up a carer's organisation, I was there in the front row. And I was actually the chair for the first year when we set it up. And tomorrow I'm going to our 13th AGM. Now this year we've managed to do something like what we were more or less talking about. We were very aware when we set up that we didn't have an awful lot of training for carers. This year the government introduced a caring package called Caring with Confidence, which is sort of UK-wide. And we managed to get a contract, and then we got a pilot, and then we got a bit lower, so we really looking forward to hear how we deal with it. But what we found was that men wanted confidence, especially men that look after their women, if their wives or their mothers or something. And we could never find a course that sort of met the criteria. And I'm hopeful that this is what we've met now. But as I say, I've been a church member since I was two. That's 6 years I've been going to church. And though my church has individuals supported me a lot, and I wouldn't have been able to walk this road and hurl my head off back to the heart or do all the charity work that I do in the background that's been part of this organisation. The church as an institution has never acknowledged me as a carer. And that I find very difficult to do. I know I do part-time work because otherwise I can't support myself and my son is not working. And I find it very difficult doing work when I don't actually know what work is because I spent such a long time at home caring for my children. And when I had a supervision last year, the year before, my manager moaned that I was so flexible. And I thought, well, that's how I survive. How do I become on flexible? I have no idea. I have no idea. And there's nobody I can talk to about it. You know what I mean? I can talk to other people in the chaos, but most of them don't work. My husband, unfortunately, because of all that happened, he committed suicide. So I was left on my own. So there's nobody, that I can go to. In a sense, I can't even go to my minister because he doesn't understand what the caring role is and why I now need to be unflexible instead of flexible. I'm still going to But I keep trusting God because I know that he's put me there for a reason. He'd got me the job. I wasn't going to apply for the job. Somebody sort of sat in my email and said, come on, you more or less finished it. Put down, why do you want this job? I said, because it's my idea and working environment. And she said, if I read that on your application, I'd have you in for an interview tomorrow. So I put it down and they expanded and they did have me in. And I thought it was a voluntary job and they said they wanted to pay me £7 an hour. And I've never had £7 an hour in my life. And 6 years and I'm still there. I'm going to get a bit more than £7. But it's been a struggle because I don't understand the work situation. You know what I mean? I'm doing the automatic stuff, but then I don't understand this thing about not being flexible.
I think having heard a lot about the Conservatives conference and the big society, I feel this room is full of people that have built a big society, and the church is way ahead of the game. So Lord, we just pray God that will be what we see. We pray God that we will make up those gaps and those problems in society. We thank you God that people are there to care. Pray for strength for those people, Lord, that are giving and giving and giving again from somewhere where they don't know where they can dig deeper. And we call on you, God, to give that strength because you can keep filling up the wells that we have within us. We have to say this in Jesus' name. Amen.
Amen.
Thank you, everybody. Thank you to these two. Give them a big clap.